This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent wherever they may live. And as I always say, this program is important for all people. Every race, every heritage has a right to be preserved, to have a society that reflects the values of their own nation, their own culture, their own religion, their own language, the things that make up that respective identity. The destruction of individual ethnic groups and the forcing of those groups together in so-called political solutions, such as the misbegotten nation of Yugoslavia, is a crime against individual freedom, and ultimately it results in violence, terrorism, and other difficulties that mankind experiences. Most of the wars we've seen on this planet have been ethnic-driven wars. And when you combine ethnicity and religion, that even makes the problem more volatile. It makes more sense to let every people basically have their own society, their own nations. In fact, nations that are a little smaller tend to be more free. A government that's closer to the people tends to be much more responsive to people than a big massive government. That's one problem with globalism. Globalism is a concept, ultimately, that promises world government. How in the world can people in New York or Paris or London determine what's best for the people in Kampala? Or the people in Kampala determine what's best for the people, say, in Stockholm? We believe here at DavidDuke.com in freedom, in individuality. We believe in the preservation of every group. We don't believe in any sort of compulsion or supremacy of one group over another group. We are opposed to that kind of ideology. We don't believe in hatred toward other peoples. Well, we certainly do believe that every people has a right to defend their own culture, their own heritage, and preserve their own identity. Today, I'm going ahead with my book, Jewish Supremacism, in an audio format. And today, one of the most important issues is the role that Israel has had in terrorism against the United States of America. Now, when I say that Israel has committed terrorism against America, most Americans say, what? Because they associate terrorism with Mideast countries. But the fact is, as you will see in this program, the fact is that Israel is the only Mideast government that has launched terrorist actions against the United States of America. In fact, repeated terrorist actions and other terrible acts of treachery, such as the Jonathan Pollard spy case. And there is tremendous evidence that Israel committed treachery by not warning us about 9/11 when the evidence is overwhelming that the Israeli intelligence services knew in advance that 9/11 was going to take place on American soil. That may sound controversial, but you'll read and you'll hear the facts in this chapter, the 11th chapter of Jewish Supremacism, made available for you in an audio format. Well, let's get going. And this is Chapter 11, Israel 3, Terrorism and Treachery Against the United States. It begins with a quotation by Dean Rusk, the U.S. Secretary of State at the time of the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty in June 1967. And Rusk has made statements on this line over the last 40 years concerning this subject. Rusk has told the American people, and again, he was U.S. Secretary of State at the time of the Israeli attack, that Israel purposefully and deliberately attacked the USS Liberty. Here we go. On June 8, 1967, an American Navy intelligence ship, the USS Liberty, patrolling off the waters of Israel and the Gaza Strip, came under the fire of jet fighter aircraft and torpedo boats. I recall that I heard the news from my transistor radio while I was at my summer job, scraping the old paint off a house in New Orleans' Lakeview section. The attack occurred during the Arab-Israeli War of 1967, a war in which America supported Israel. The first news accounts did not identify the attacking parties, and I assumed, as did most Americans, that the Egyptians, in a supremely brutal and stupid attack, had struck a U.S. vessel in retaliation for our massive support of the Israeli military. Immediately after the first reports of the attack came in, a few elected officials had already begun to call for immediate military retaliation against Egypt. In spite of my growing knowledge of the pernicious nature of Zionism, my deeply embedded patriotism came pouring out. I became angry at Egypt for daring to attack an American vessel. Later on, reports finally began to filter in that it was the Israelis who had attacked the American ship, wounding 173 Americans and killing 34. The official excuse was that the Israelis had mistaken the Liberty for an Egyptian ship. Over the next few weeks, a great deal of evidence emerged revealing that the attack had been deliberate. Still, the major media practically dropped all the stories of the USS Liberty and its 202 American casualties in deference to stories of gallant little Israel fighting its heroic war with Egypt and Lebanon. The crew had been ordered not to divulge any information about the attack. When the silence was finally broken years later by Lieutenant James Eanes, an officer aboard the Liberty, the overwhelming evidence revealed a murderous and treacherous attack by the Israelis on an American ship. The USS Liberty, a lightly armed intelligence ship whose mission was to intercept foreign radio communications, had been sailing in international waters off the Egyptian town of El Arish, which Israeli forces had just captured. Israel knew that the Liberty was monitoring its transmissions, and it was fearful it would learn of preparations for a planned invasion of Syria. Also, the Liberty had intercepted Israeli radio communications showing that they had murdered hundreds of unarmed Egyptian prisoners of war in the Sinai. On the clear and breezy morning of June 8, Israeli fighter jets circled the Liberty numerous times, coming in so low and so close that the ship's crewmen waved at the pilots and could actually see their faces. The Liberty was a clearly marked U.S. Navy vessel with large U.S. Navy identifying letters, and it had a huge American flag flying stiffly in the breeze of a clear day. With no warning, at 2 p.m., unmarked Israeli jets attacked the Liberty with rockets, cannon fire, and napalm bombs. Their first target was the radio room, which they destroyed along with the Liberty's antennas. The fighters made repeated passes, attacking the ship until they ran out of bombs and ammo and broke off the attack. At that point, the men of the Liberty replaced the first American flag, which had been shot away, with an oversized 7-by-13-foot flag. Well, the Israelis obviously knew the ship was American as they intercepted and tried to electronically jam the Liberty's radio signals for help. Incredibly, the Liberty's radio signals had been able to be released because the operators had managed to rig up a new antenna and get a distress call through. And the distress call, to the bad luck of Israel, identified the attackers and requested help from the Mediterranean Sixth Fleet. The carrier Saratoga and America sent messages that help was on the way and dispatched fighters to defend the Liberty. The beleaguered and bloodied crew of the Liberty waited in vain for the promised fighter support as Israeli torpedo boats then attacked, trying to sink the Liberty and finish off the crew who were now fighting the napalm fires on the decks and tending to the wounded. The Israelis raked the Liberty with 20 and 40 millimeter cannon fire and struck the ship with a torpedo at the waterline, killing 22 more sailors below the decks. The torpedo boats came in close enough to machine gun the crew tending to the wounded on the deck. Despite 821 holes, each bigger than a man's fist, napalm bombs exploding on the decks and in the superstructure, and a gaping hole and serious torpedo damage at the waterline, miraculously, the USS Liberty remained afloat. No thanks to the U.S. fighter support, which never came, for they had been called back by orders of President Lyndon Johnson before they could intercept the attackers. Israel obviously intended to sink the Liberty and kill everyone on board. In violation of international law, Israel torpedo boats even machine-gunned the Liberty's deployed life rafts. They sought to knock out the Liberty's communication room and jam her radio signals to prevent her from identifying her attackers, and then to send the American ship and her crew to the bottom, so no one could refute the natural supposition that the treacherous deed had been committed by the Egyptians. The Zionists knew that by knocking out the Liberty, they would have more of a free hand in Syria, and the indignation over the sinking of an American ship by the Egyptians would garner unconditional support for Israel's most radical war aims. Only the courage and resourcefulness of the men of the USS Liberty prevented that further miscarriage of justice. In his recall of the U.S. Navy jets sent to protect the Liberty, Johnson committed one of the most treasonous acts of betrayal in American history. He cared more about preventing a public breach between the U.S. and Israel than saving the lives of American fighting men. The survivors of the Liberty have stated clearly that had the jets not been recalled, the torpedo boat attack could have been stopped, saving many American lives. Captain William McGonagall, the Liberty's commanding officer, although seriously wounded, showed exceptional heroism that eventually won him the Congressional Medal of Honor. Usually the president awards the nation's highest honor in a White House ceremony along with a citation recording the details of the heroic deed. President Johnson called the Israelis to see if they had any objection to the awarding of the medal and then decided not to take part in the ceremony or even allow it at the White House. The Secretary of the Navy ended up awarding the medal at the Washington Naval Yard, and the citation did not even identify Israel as the attacker. The Washington Post ran no story about Captain McGonagall receiving the award. The U.S. Navy conducted a perfunctory court of inquiry lasting only 4 days and failed to call even one Israeli to testify. Lieutenant James Eanes, one of the Liberty's officers, wrote a detailed book about the incident called Assault on the Liberty, published in 1979. It exposes the tremendous evidence showing how the attack was a calculated and deliberate attempt to sink a ship the Israelis knew was American and kill any survivors so there would be no American witnesses. The U.S. ambassador to Lebanon at the time has also come forward and stated that when he was on duty in the Middle East, he heard U.S. intercepted Israeli communications with the attacking Israeli fighters, acknowledging the ship was American. Many prominent leaders of the U.S. Navy courageously have gone on record to demand a real inquiry on the Liberty, and the head of Navy operations said that the evidence clearly pointed to a planned attack. Secretary of State Dean Rusk, Admiral Thomas Moore, and the surviving crew of the USS Liberty all say the attack was clearly deliberate. Perhaps one could understand such a treacherous act from stated enemies of our country, but not from a supposed ally. The fact that Israel had attacked the forces of the nation that has supported it more than any other, with money diplomacy, goodwill, and even military arms, including the very weapons that were turned against our men, has to be one of the most egregious acts of military betrayal in the history of nations. I ask myself how Israel could be so reckless as to attack an American vessel. The obvious answer was that they knew their operation against the Liberty held very little risk. For if the attack succeeded and the ship and all of its crew were destroyed, Israel would get everything it wanted in the war. If they failed in their mission to sink the Liberty and blame it on the Egyptians, the Israelis knew they could pass it off as a mistake. They also knew that their massive influence in the American government and the press would help them cover up their treachery. After sweeping the terror and dispossession of 1.5 million Palestinians under the rug for half a century, hiding the treachery against the USS Liberty was child's play. The Jewish-dominated American media expressed no outrage for the attack and supinely accepted the specious Israeli excuse for it. Even though our own Secretary of State and our own Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said the Israeli attack was deliberate, the Jewish lobby was even able to prevent a formal congressional inquiry into the attack. In contrast, the USS Liberty's sister ship, the USS Pueblo, was captured by North Korea the following year, 1968, with the loss of only one life. Yet within a year, the U.S. Congress launched a lengthy and formal inquiry into that attack. And still, as of this writing and of this audio book, there has been no formal inquiry into the attack on the USS Liberty. As a side note, I want to remind you as well that the members of the crew of the Liberty were threatened with court-martial and prison if they dared to talk about this attack to the press and reveal its details to the media about what Israel did to them. How did the political leaders of the United States respond to the Israeli act of war against it? Did America bomb Tel Aviv as it did Kabul, Afghanistan? No. The Israeli-controlled American government, along with the Jewish-controlled media, committed a clear case of treason against America by covering up this vicious terrorist surprise attack. And it continues to send billions of American tax dollars to Israel in military and monetary aid. I must invoke the example of Pearl Harbor. Any American government official who had given aid or comfort to Japan after the attack in 1941 would have been prosecuted as a traitor to the United States. I charge those American government officials who collaborate with the Jewish lobby and the Jewish-dominated media in continuing to support Israel after its attack on the USS Liberty are traitors against the United States of America. When I learned the full truth of the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty a few weeks after the actual attack, I remembered how incensed I had felt when I heard on my transistor radio how the Egyptians had apparently attacked an American ship. Those moments of anger had long passed when years later I read Ean's book. However, Ean's poignant accounts of the dead and dying men aboard the Liberty caused another anger to rise in me, again only to give way to profound sadness for my country. As a young and proud American, I could not understand how our president could treasonously refuse to defend American men under fire. How could our government willingly cover up the intentional Israeli murder of Americans and even reward the murderers with even more billions of our tax money in foreign aid? The incident shocked me so much that it drove me to research Israel's true record of terrorism and treachery against the United States. And I learned very quickly that the Liberty was not the first Israeli act of terrorism and treachery against the United States. This section is called The Levant Affair, Israeli Terrorism Against America. In 1954, the Israeli government launched a secret operation of terror against the United States called Operation Susanna. It plotted to murder Americans and blow up American installations in Egypt. Their plan was to leave false evidence to indicate that the Egyptians committed the terrorist acts so as to make America go to war against Egypt on the side of Israel. Jewish agents succeeded in blowing up some post offices and American libraries in Cairo and Alexandria. On the way to blow up an American movie house, the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Theater, an Israeli's agent's bomb went off prematurely. Thankfully, for both Egypt and for America, the plot was then exposed and stopped in its early stages. Because of the capture of the Israeli agents, the world learned of the Israeli treachery, and the Israeli foreign minister, Phinehas Lavan, was later forced to resign. The whole episode became known as the Lavan Affair. Today, the Jewish-dominated American media and publishing establishment deftly cover up this Israeli treachery against us. Most Americans know nothing about it. For instance, only a slight mention of the Lavan Affair is found in the popular Encarta Encyclopedia. Now, the reference can be found in an article about Ben-Gurion, authored by the Zionist Bernard Reich. It is appropriate to note that the article's author illustrates a typical media and academic pattern. When Americans suppose they are reading an unbiased encyclopedia or news magazine account, they more often than not are reading a purposefully distorted account written by ardent Jewish Zionists. Here is the exact wording of its reporting of this Israeli acts of terrorism against America. Quote, Ben-Gurion returned to politics in 1955 to replace Minister of Defense Phinehas Lavan, who resigned after a failed attempt to sabotage Egypt's relations with the West. Period. Unquote. Note how the article meekly says, quote, a failed attempt to sabotage Egypt's relations with the West. Unquote. What does this mean to the reader? Sabotaging relations sounds as though Israel might have just said a few nasty things about Egypt and America behind each other's back. The intentional deception used in this article by its Jewish author is typical of the distortions that go on countless times in the mass media. Now, the line in Encarta should read, quote, who was forced to resign after Israel was caught committing terrorist bombings against the United States, in order to treacherously and unjustly incite America into a war against an innocent nation. Unquote. I am sure that 90% of those who now hear these lines or read these lines in my book have never heard of the Lavan Affair. If you still might doubt that Israel has committed this terrorist plot against America and Egypt, here's a quote from a recent article appearing in the Jewish magazine Moment, written by Samuel Katz and meant for its small Jewish audience. The article is more forward than the Encarta reference, yet it still omits the provocative word terrorism, a word Israel uses when Palestinians blow up Israeli army units. Quote, and the failures were as common as the spectacular successes. In the mid-1950s, Amman, the Jewish Defense Agency, suffered a serious setback during the infamous Operation Susanna, when Israeli agents provoked Jews in Egypt to attack American and British targets and incite anti-Western sentiment. Many Jews were arrested and some were executed. The bungled operation was a severe embarrassment for the government of Prime Minister David Ben-Gurion and his defense minister, Phinehas Lavan. Unquote. So, in the Lavan Affair, we learned how our so-called best friend in the Middle East, Israel, rewards the United States for its unconditional monetary and military support by committing terrorism against us. Ponder the fact that most Americans have never even heard about this Israeli terrorist attack against our people. If the Egyptian government had been behind this terror against America, we would have rightly considered it an act of war, and we would have gone to war against Egypt and bombed it unmercifully, just as we've done against Afghanistan. And the media, They would have clamored for such a tax, just as they demanded a tax against Afghanistan after the September 11 attacks 2001. In fact, we attacked Afghanistan on far less grounds than we had for attacking Israel. No evidence existed that Afghanistan approved of or even knew anything about the attack on the World Trade Center. But in the Levon affair, the Israeli government itself had committed a direct act of war against the United States of America. America, though, of course, did not bomb Tel Aviv in retaliation. America did not sever its diplomatic relations with Israel. In fact, we did not even cut off our billions of dollars in monetary and military aid. And the question is, why not? Again, I invoke the example of Pearl Harbor. As I did in recounting the attack on the USS Liberty, any American government official who would have given aid to the Japanese after the attack on Pearl Harbor would have been prosecuted as a traitor to the United States. Let me be perfectly blunt. Those Americans and government who continued our support of Israel after it had committed terrorist attacks against the people of the United States clearly committed treason against the United States. If only American leaders, after Israel's attack against us, the terrorist attack of the Levon affair, or after the attack on the Liberty, would simply have stopped their treasonous aid to Israel, there would have been no subsequent acts of terror against us, such as in the World Trade Center and the Pentagon attacks. What further acts of terrorism could we prevent by stopping the flow of our money and military arms to Israel right now? The next section is Ongoing Israeli Treachery, the Pollard Affair. In the 1980s, Israel recruited an American Jew, Jonathan Pollard, to spy against the United States. After his apprehension, Israeli officials at first claimed he was a, quote, rogue agent, unquote, but later they admitted that Pollard was working for them from the beginning. Other than the Jewish spies, Ethel and Julius Rosenberg, who gave her atom bomb secrets to the Soviets, probably no spies have ever done more damage to our country than that which was done by this single Israeli spy, Jonathan Pollard. Israel's use of Pollard's information not only destroyed our intelligence operations in the Mideast, it practically destroyed our intelligence apparatus in the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc. Many of America's most loyal and best agents in the communist world were executed because Israel sold or bartered Pollard's stolen information to the Soviets. As the article below by Eric Margolis explains, America's supposed wonderful friend and ally, Israel, would not even allow the United States to debrief the Mossad agents who handled the Pollard spy case. They wouldn't even let us determine the full extent of the damage done to the United States and the dangers posed to American agents overseas. Some of the enormously sensitive secrets stolen by Pollard were sold or bartered by Israel to the Soviet Union. Here's a quotation directly from this article. A number of key CIA agents in the East Bloc were allegedly executed as a result of Pollard's spying. The KGB likely gained access to top secret U.S. codes, either directly from Israel or through spies in Israel's government. In short, Pollard's treachery caused one of the worst security disasters in modern U.S. history. So, Israel, which receives billions in American aid, has continuously and treacherously spied on and broken the very security of the United States. To further demonstrate their contempt for us, they even bartered the top secret information they had stolen from us to America's worst enemies. Even after Israel's public relations apologies for the Pollard spying and after assuring American officials it would never happen again, it has continued to spy on us. Los Angeles Times, 1997, reported that an American Jew named David A. Tenenbaum admitted to divulging secrets to Israel. To quote the Los Angeles Times, quote, a civilian engineer working at the Army Command facility near Detroit has admitted divulging classified military information to Israeli officials over the last 10 years. After the September 11, 2001 attacks in the World Trade Center, 140 Jews were held by the FBI for spying, including major Jewish intelligence operatives. Here's a quote from the Fox News Network, Washington. Some 60 Israelis who federal investigators have said are part of a long-running effort to spy on American government officials are among the hundreds of foreigners detained since the September 11 terror attacks, Fox News has learned. Numerous classified documents obtained by Fox News indicate that even prior to September 11, as many as 140 other Israelis had been detained or arrested in a secretive and sprawling investigation into suspected espionage by Israelis in the United States. Documents, they say, targeted and penetrated military bases, the DEA, FBI, and dozens of other government facilities, and even secret offices and unlisted private homes of law enforcement and intelligence personnel. The majority of those questions stated that they served in military intelligence, electronic surveillance, intercept, or explosive ordnance units. Quote, why would Israelis spy in and on the U.S.? A General Accounting Office investigation referred to Israel as a country A and said, according to U.S. intelligence agency, the government of country A conducts the most aggressive espionage operations against the U.S. of any U.S. ally, unquote. A defense intelligence report said Israel has a voracious appetite for information and said the Israelis are motivated by strong survival instincts which dictate every possible facet of their political and economic policies. It aggressively collects military and industrial technology, and the U.S. is a high priority target. The document concludes Israel possesses the resources and the technical capability to achieve its collection objectives. And the last paragraph, there are other things to consider, and in the days ahead, we'll take a look at the U.S. phone system and law enforcement's methods for wiretaps and an investigation that both have been compromised by our friends, which implied the Israelis, overseas. Unquote. It is impossible to overstate the extent of treason going on in the United States government on behalf of Israel, even after the terrible damage of the Pollard spy case. American government officials gave the contract for U.S. government wiretaps within the United States to an Israeli firm funded by the Israeli government. Every American can obviously understand the immense damage that can be caused from a foreign government spying on us. Spying has always been prosecuted by every nation as one of the most serious crimes, and justly so. A very legitimate question is, why does the American government tolerate Israel's spying and treachery against our country? And how can our leaders tolerate the treason that has become so commonplace in our government? President Bush should have simply said to Israel, America does not have to give you billions of American tax dollars. We do not have to diplomatically support your terrorism and supremacy in the United Nations. The least we should have expected in return is that you do not spy on us and betray us. Since you have repeatedly committed treachery against us, that's it. You don't get another dime. Furthermore, if you commit any more treachery against America, we will answer it with military response, a military response that will make our attack on the Taliban look like child's play. Well, I guess that's a response we can only wish for. We're never going to get that kind of response from George Bush. The fact that no American official would make such a statement is proof of Israel's power over them, and it offers clear evidence of the treason that prospers in the American government. Even after Israel repeatedly proved its willingness to spy on us and critically damage America's intelligence operations, President Clinton appointed a dedicated Zionist Jew as chairman of the National Security Council, the highest and most sensitive intelligence position in the White House. Even the Israeli daily Maariv referred to Berger as a, quote, warm Jew, meaning that he's devoted to Israel first. Appointing Berger as National Security Council chief after the Pollard case is pure insanity. President Bush continued the same insanity of putting those loyal to Israel in the most sensitive positions in the U.S. government. In the National Security Council, there's been increasing Jewish consolidation from the first days of the Bush presidency. Richard Sale of UPI on February 28, 2003, wrote about Zionist Elliot Abrams. A staff shakeup, this is a quote, a staff shakeup at the National Security Council is likely to mean the United States will take a harder pro-Israel stance in the Middle East, Elliot Abrams, the former controversial Reagan administration official who President Bush last December appointed to the NSC to take charge of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, has removed several staff members who were regarded as even-handed on the issue. That's a direct quote from UPI. The fact that Israel could commit these outrages against the United States without suffering scathing media attacks and causing at least the cutoff of American aid to Israel, if not placing Israel on our enemies list, shows their absolute supremacism over the American establishment. It's no wonder that Ariel Sharon could make the following statement to Simon Peres when he suggested that Israel might lose American aid if it did not pull back recent Israeli incursions into the West Bank. Sharon responded, quote, "Every time we do something, you tell me America will do this and will do that. I want to tell you something very clear. Don't worry about America. American pressure on Israel. We, the Jewish people, control America, and the Americans know it." It's October 3, 2001. Jonathan Pollard is not the only American who has committed treason against America. All those in the American government who would continue to monetarily and militarily support a foreign nation that commits terrorism against us, spies on us, and severely damages our intelligence operations, along with causing the deaths of American agents, have committed treason against the United States of America. In response to these ongoing acts of terrorism and treachery against the United States, a truly patriotic American government would have, at the very least, ended our support for Israel. Supporting a foreign nation after it willfully commits such acts of treachery against America is nothing less than treason. The fact that billions of dollars of American taxpayer support to Israel does not miss a single beat is but one more indicator of the power of Jewish supremacism over the American establishment. Well, that's it for the first part of Chapter 11, Israeli Terrorism and Treachery Against the United States of America. And tomorrow we will take up the section Jewish Treachery in the 9/11 Attacks, the incredible, copious evidence, the powerful evidence showing that Israel had at least forewarning of the attacks, the terrible and tragic attacks of September 11 in 2001. And ladies and gentlemen, these are some of the most important facts and issues I think that I've ever talked about on my radio program. They are damning facts against Israel, and there's no way that getting these facts out there can help but wake people up as to the reality of this so-called ally that commits such terrorism and treachery against the United States. Imagine when they start talking about terrorist groups like Hezbollah and these other groups. They talk about Syria. They talk about Iran. Israel is the only nation whose government has actually authorized and committed numerous terrorist acts against the United States of America. And yet, not only do we not retaliate against them militarily, we supply them with more money and more arms while they continue their treachery against us. Please help me spread this word all over the internet, all over the world. It's your responsibility, just as it's my responsibility to continue my work in researching and writing and speaking and doing everything I can to spread this word. I need your financial support to do that. I need your moral support. I need your physical labor, even if it's simply typing a few letters on your keyboard and sending emails and making posts across the world and sending this information to your friends, family, associates, everywhere on the planet. Thanks so much for your work and your efforts. I appreciate it. I hope you have a great weekend. I look forward to being with you again on Monday with the next section, Jewish Treachery and the 9/11 Attacks, from my book, Jewish Supremacism. Until then, God bless you and take care, and let's go forward to the truth and to victory.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.davidduke.org. www.daviddukes.com.